Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Today we recap the Red Series, see what's happening down on the farm, and preview the upcoming series versus the Cubs. You're listening to the Bucko Banner podcast brought to you by the Just Baseball Media Network. Scotty, cue the music.
Rocking 101, she compliment my taste. Whiskey in my lemonade, cause I like the way it tastes. Best seats at the Pirates game, they let me run the base. Yeah, my time is like my money, cause I can't afford to waste. Wifey is a lawyer, take my date to my dates. Order steak by the plates, and in case after case, run my race at my pace, clear the grass of the snake.
Adam, four straight days at PNC Park, and we're back. I'm not gonna lie, I'm pretty tired.
It was rough. Today was rough. I was trying to find the desire to keep moving forward.
Same.
Third inning, we knew we needed to get more content. We had some videos we needed to wrap up. It was a struggle today because you didn't have anyone drunk out in center field.
No one.
It was all kids. Like, it was all kids.
None of the kids were drunk. I just want to note that.
That's a whole separate issue. It's a whole separate issue. Too many kids, not enough drunk 20-year-olds that wanted to get on a mini mic.
Yeah. Yeah, but we got some. We got some content, and we saw a great game, which we'll get into in a little bit, but great game.
Yeah. For the most part, bad baseball, like all around between the Reds and the Pirates. There was just a lot of dumb decisions made on both ends, whether it was base running or just like the throws made from the outfield or poor at bats. You could see why the Pirates are the Pirates and the Reds are the Reds, and why they're both at the bottom of the Central right now. They were able to pull out three or four. Awesome. But it was very apparent on what the issues are with both of these teams.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to be honest with you, maybe I'm being biased. I think the Pirates are a better team.
You said it. You said it last episode.
I did.
And I kind of was like, we'll see. They are. They are a better team. You're right.
I think we're more comparable to the Mariners. And I even think the Mariners have a much better pitching staff and have a few more bats, but it's kind of a similar dynamic where they don't struggle when it comes to the rotation. The rotation can get them more wins than they probably, earn. But the bats really struggle, and that's going to be a point of emphasis this offseason. I think the Pirates are a better team than the Reds. If you get past that starting rotation, Hunter Green's been on the IL. Lodolo was pretty good on game one, and we'll talk about that, but you know, that bullpen, man, it's like you got a good chance of winning this game.
Justin Wilson appearance.
Oh my God.
A couple of times. Playing. Crazy. Well, he was on those like playoff teams, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm almost positive he was. He was on a Fresno State College World Series team. Like he's got to be close to 40, if not 40.
Well, he was not good.
No.
He was not good. You mentioned the Mariners. And I have this highlighted because I wanted to talk about it before we get into this last weekend. The Mariners fired their coach after an epic meltdown to end the season. After they were probably the most active team at the trade deadline, getting Randy Arozarena, Justin Turner,
Victor Robles was signed off waivers, I think. Yeah.
So, and then they extended him.
Yep.
And they have, we've mentioned it before, they have probably the best pitching staff in all of baseball. They fired their coach. They've basically declared their season over.
They're moving, their hitting coach.
They're moving on. They're starting their search now. They're on to 2025.
I just want to note, I don't know if there is going to be a search because they're not giving Dan Wilson the interim tag. I'm sure they're going to be open-minded once the season ends, but I saw a quote the other day, like, Dan Wilson is not the interim. So
that had to be very calculated then.
Mm-hmm.
If he was just the heir apparent
to
service, but it intrigues me because the Pirates had expectations, not anywhere close to the Mariners. They don't spend as much money as the Mariners do. It's not as large of a market. And we've kind of just rode out the wave, and they're going to continue to do that till the end of the season, which I honestly don't have a problem with. I don't really see the value right now of getting rid of Shelton or Andy Haynes or anyone else on the staff or someone in the front office, because I've mentioned it before, there's value of playing good baseball to end the season, no matter what position you're in, because it sets you up going into next season. They've been better lately. It hasn't been as bad. They just took 3 out of 4 from the Reds. They're going to play another NL Central team in the Cubs coming up. I just want to see them play good baseball moving forward, regardless of the decisions that Derek Shelton makes, whatever the front office decides to do. I do want to see certain guys getting called up and get playing time to see what we have going into next year, because that'll give a better determination of what we need in free agency or what moves they need to make. But I found it interesting because it's a very similar situation in terms of lots of arms, no bats.
Yeah.
What do you think of it?
Yeah. I've gone back and forth on the whole, should someone be fired now? And I think I agree with you, because I think the Pirates' main issue is a roster construction issue. It's not necessarily like, I disagree with a lot of things that Shelty does, not everything, but I think he's done the most he can with what he's given. And I haven't heard any stories like, obviously we have the Andy Haynes stories from Milwaukee with Christian Yelich. And I mean, you could just watch and see for yourself. Like, it seems like a lot of guys don't really have a plan up at the plate. But for Shelty, you don't hear the stories like, oh, he can't control the locker room or anything like that. Now, there were some rumors that Service just lost the locker room. Like, guys didn't really feel heard by him. And there was like some critiques there. So, you know, maybe the Mariners were like, all right, we were, you know, first in the AOS all year, and the Astros, and we were like, you know, got a 10-minute head start on the Astros, and in August they finally passed us up. So like, this can't happen again, and we're going to set the tone now. With the Pirates, it's like they're in a bad division, and you know, they played, I think they exceeded their own expectations this year, okay, despite the poor offensive play. So I think they're just going to see what they have, ride it out to the end of the year. If I was a betting man, I think they explore their options in the offseason. I don't want to talk about Shelty's job. I like Shelty, but I would say that they're probably going to explore their options. So similar situations, similar teams, but a little bit different, a little bit different. And like I said, I think this is more of a roster construction issue more than a coaching issue.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about who you surround yourself with as well. I agree with Haynes is probably gone. There hasn't been a plan all year, but if that means Haynes is gone, then it's probably more to come, right? Because usually the manager is making decisions on who they want to surround themselves with, right? Let's get by that and talk about some positives. It was a really unique situation at PNC Park this weekend. They had the Hall of Fame weekend. Manny Sanguin, Jim Leland, and Barry Bonds were inducted into the Pirates Hall of Fame. We were there for the ceremony. It was really well done. Short, sweet, to the point. The plaques were up. Seeing Barry Bonds in the Pirates Hall of Fame is awesome.
Yeah, it's so cool, man. Like, come on. We know the whole steroid issue and him getting in the National Baseball Hall of Fame, but to see him get inducted into a Hall of Fame and being at being our Hall of Fame is really cool. You know, my dad actually asked me, like, did he get booed? I was like, actually, no. Because I remember as a child when the Giants came to town, Barry Bonds would get booed like crazy.
He gets booed everywhere.
Everywhere. I think the narrative around Barry Bonds has changed as we get further and further away from the steroid era and our opinions on that evolve because, you know, and we've talked about this too. Like, yeah, steroid, like it's unethical, but you still have to have the ability to hit a baseball. And Barry Bonds had this unbelievable ability to hit a baseball. You can be as strong as ever, but that those steroids aren't going to make you hit 755 home runs. They're going to aid in some strength, but you still have to have that hand eye, that swing in order to generate loft on the ball and hit that many home runs. And he had an immaculate career. I think we can all agree with that. And one of Aaron Judge this year, I feel like is like the closest thing we've seen to him. Cause I remember growing up, it was Albert Pujols was someone you feared with the Cardinals. Barry Bonds was someone you didn't pitch to. Like, I feel like we haven't had that guy until Aaron Judge this year.
Yeah. We discussed that, I think, earlier today, because Aaron Judge hit two home runs and he's on a chase to break his own record. Barry Bonds' career with the Pirates, let's forget everything after, which I want to get into in a second. His career with the Pirates was unbelievable. Yeah. Outside of San Francisco. Our friend, also named Adam, brought it up. There was no mention of anything that he did outside of the Pirates, which is kind of hilarious because he's hit the most home runs of all time.
Yeah.
He's probably the greatest hitter of all time. Probably the greatest player of all time, if we're really breaking it down. That was a little interesting. There's no mention of that whatsoever. But it seemed like Barry really embraced Pittsburgh and called it home. And it felt very natural with him being here. The Barry Bonds jerseys were out, which is still, in my opinion, one of the best Pirates jerseys you could buy.
My favorite one was the Arizona State jersey that I saw someone wearing. I thought that was pretty cool.
Really, really cool. Barry Bonds described hitting in probably the simplest way I've ever heard. And it only works for Barry Bonds.
Yeah.
He said a catcher just catches the ball with his mitt, right?
Oh, I remember.
And he said, all I'm doing is just catching the ball with my bat. Okay, Barry, thanks. Right? Like, people spend their whole life trying to perfect a swing. He's like, oh, no, it's just, you just catch the ball with your glove. I'm just catching with the bat. Simple as that.
Easy enough. I mean, that's why he had a short stint as the Marlins hitting coach. And as they say, like, just because you were so good at it doesn't mean that you can put it into words and teach it. Like, it just, like, comes natural to you. Some guys are different. They might have been really good at it, and they can talk about it and teach it. So, yeah, I mean, not saying that his hitting coach career was unsuccessful, but, like, it was short-lived. And it might sound – the things that he believes and teaches might sound simpler to him than it does to the vast majority of the population. So
I heard a bunch of Yinzers yelling, hire Barry as the hitting coach. It's already been done before. It wasn't great.
Yeah.
We'll find someone else outside of Andy Haynes. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Manny Sanguin, which I think is the most special of them all, because Manny has been here throughout his career and then throughout his retirement. He's at the ballpark about every day. He is Pittsburgh, right? He's for Pittsburgh, for the people, for the Pirates. There's not many like that. I think it's safe to say you could probably look through the whole league and there's not a guy that stuck with an organization in the way that he has for so many years. And he's getting old, man. And it's really nice to see him get his recognition.
Yeah, 100%. And just a Hall of Fame human being too. Like, if you go to Clemente Museum in Pittsburgh, they'll tell you stories about him. Him and Roberto were like the best of friends. And there's a story that like almost brought tears to my eyes. Not gonna lie. Like, well, he went after Roberto died, and he was there to comfort Vera and the family. And he was like, they went out for a search party to try to find his body. And he was like jumping off of a boat, diving into the Caribbean, like looking himself, like just an awesome story.
Yeah.
Sad, but like, you know, he is Pittsburgh, like you said, and I'm really happy that he's decorated here at the ballpark. And you, if you go to PNC Park and you go out to the outfield, he's there every day. So almost every game. So it's good to see him at the ballpark. And then there's Jim Leland. Let's talk about Jim Leland real quick. Jim Leland is just a meme. Okay. Like when I think of Jim Leland, I think of him standing at the top of the steps of the dugout, smoking a cigarette and just being just an old school blue collar yinzer. He's from Toledo, Ohio, not too far from here, but like I think he still lives here. I know his son was in, my age in the Pittsburgh area playing high school baseball and got drafted by the Tigers. So pretty sure his family still resides here. And, you know, he stuck around Pittsburgh. Like he managed in Miami, he managed in Detroit. Like he's been all over the place, but he chose to stay in Pittsburgh and raise a family. He started, I'm pretty sure he was part of the group or the starter of the Beaver Valley Travel Baseball. If you grew up in Pittsburgh and played travel baseball, Beaver Valley is one of the best programs. I'm not sure if it still is, but it was when I was growing up. He had a big, big part in that. So he's been a big, not just for the Pirates, but a big part of the community here in Pittsburgh. And to see him decorated with Barry, because obviously we all know the clip of him getting in Barry's face is one of the best clips of all time, was cool to see.
Absolutely. I believe his Hall of Fame speech, it was for the Pirates, was short and sweet. He said something along the lines of, in Pittsburgh, I have friends at the hospital, I have friends at the courthouse, and I have friends at the gas station. Kind of just embracing like the city.
Yeah, it was just so cool.
It was really cool, and it was so short and simple, yet resonated so much with probably so many people on like the small city, the chemistry that everybody has, and it's such a sports town. We talk about Pittsburgh being like a big little city, and I think he encapsulated that really well in such a short period of time. So really cool to see all that. The numbers will be out there on the Riverwalk. The plaques are already up. But let's talk a little bit about what happened this week. There was some, I would say not some, there was a lot of transactions that happened. Ryder Ryan, we called it. He's back in Indy. They signed free agent left-handed pitcher Blake Townsend to a minor league contract. Brady Feigl has a locker at PNC Park.
We cool talked, story there.
Yeah. You want to get into that real quick?
No, I mean, you know, Jack from Just Baseball Network, he, you know, he's the broadcaster for Indianapolis. He was the first person I think that brought him up on the pod who said, this is a guy you need to watch because he's fascinating. Left-handed guy, throws hard out of the pen from the left side. He almost gave up baseball, went to indie ball, and he's back in pro ball, signed a minor league contract with the Pirates. And I'm excited to see what he has. We've had a few lefty pitchers go down this year. Baraki, I mean, Chapman's been a steady presence in the pen. We traded for Jalen Beeks, who hasn't been, I don't know, hasn't been all that great, I guess. So I'm excited to see him get a chance. He's 33 years old. So this is probably one of the last chances he'll get, and I hope he shows out.
Jalen Beeks, man. Maybe the worst walkout song of all time. I don't want to – listen, you choose what you want to think of it, but the difference between him and Dennis Santana's walk-up song – let's just say Dennis Santana has 21 Savage. Whatever the opposite of 21 Savage is, times that by 1,000, and then that's Jalen Beeks' walkout music. And hearing them back-to-back was unbelievable today. End of the year, minor league season's coming to an end. That means there's a lot of moves that are being made, guys being promoted. Namely, Tamar Johnson is going to Double A Altoona, where he will finish the year there and then start the year there next year. He's only 20 years old. Michael Kennedy, who we've talked about a lot on this pod, he's been minor league player of the week once or twice. He is going to High A Greensboro, where he will end the year, and then he will likely start the year there next year. Another high school guy. Some really surprising moves made today after the game. Michael A. Taylor was placed on outright waivers, which basically means a team can pick him up, pay the rest of his salary for the remainder of the season, clearing it off the Pirates' books. If not, he's not going anywhere. He'll finish the season with the Pirates, and then he'll become a free agent. I think somebody's probably going to pay. I mean, a team that's competing that wants a guy to plug in the eighth or ninth inning for defense, why not?
I think if you claim him too, like this is the only instance in which if you're designated for assignment or waived, that a trade can be made, because if a team places a claim for him, they have like so many hours to like make a trade, and that trade's going to be like cash or low level player. So yeah, I'm a little bit shocked by this. I'm not surprised that they're trying to save money here. That the money part doesn't surprise me at all, but I'm so tired of watching G1 Bay in center field and G1 Bay play in general that I think majority of people would agree that they would much rather watch Michael A. Taylor than G1 Bay. But yeah, here we are, cost savings time.
Sure. I mean, the Michael A. Taylor experiment was definitely a failed one. I remember early in free agency last year, I believe the Pirates made him an offer, which was found to be insulting to Michael A. Taylor. And then he ended up signing late in spring training. Just didn't work out. I don't know if it's age or just a down year, but I'm sure he's going to play somewhere next year. It's just not a good career as a Pirate. And then sadly, Joey Bart went down with a hamstring injury today, which means Henry Davis is on his way back to Pittsburgh. He was recalled today. You figured that was going to happen at some point. You hate to see it with an injury to Joey Bart. You got to get him reps. He's been pretty much killing it in AAA. He's hitting plus 300. I think he's hitting around 308. He's been crushing. We talk about it all the time. The jump between AAA and Major League Baseball has never been greater. We have to see what we have in Henry Davis.
Yeah, absolutely. I would have liked to see Bart and Davis together here these last 2 months. I think Davis needed the time in AAA. Hopefully we see adjustments. Grandal, on a positive side, has hit like 280 over the last month. So I just saw that one today. He's been a little bit on a hot streak. So whatever. Skeens keeps his catcher, and then Henry Davis gets another opportunity. So we'll see how that goes. I don't know how serious the Joey Bart injury is, but given at this point in the season, you got to think that he's almost done. Why risk it? Yeah, maybe back last week or two, but hamstring is nothing to mess around with, as you know, both of us probably know about a hamstring. It's not fun, and you're always really hesitant to come back and go full speed. So as a catcher, I hope they take the time with him to get him better. But Adam, let's move on to our game recaps.
All right, Scott, let's get into the game recaps versus the Reds. Thursday was Skeens Day, got off to a hot start, 7-0 win. Skeens, 6 innings pitched, 2 hits, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts. He has an ERA of 2.16, 12 whiffs. People were concerned about the velo going down, the control. I think he put that to rest, right? He was hit hard only once the entire game. He only threw the curveball. We talked about it before. He threw the curveball like 25 times in the past week. Only threw it 3 times. Picked off Ellie De La Cruz, which became a theme over the weekend. I think you tweeted Ellie De La picked off. I mean, if you're going to steal a lot of bases, you got to take risky leads. But his move is unbelievable.
I think he's picked off Ellie twice too, by the way, this year.
He's so quick.
Yeah.
He's so quick. On the other side was Nick Lodolo. Pirates have struggled with him in the past. He only went 4 2/3, 2 hits, 5 earned, 3 walks, 9 Ks. He was hit hard 3 times. You had a bullpen of Ben Heller and Hunter Stratton, who eventually went down at the end of the week with a really bad knee injury. You had a Grundahl home run again in this one, and that'll kick off the week of him playing really well. Brian De La Cruz had his first 3-hit game as a Pirate, bases clearing double. And then Reynolds with 2 hits, team 3-for-9, runners in scoring position, 5 left on base, 14 strikeouts. They won 7-0. They struck out crazy. 14 times, and they walked 3 times, 7 hits. Here's the difference. They struck out 14 times, but they had 5 2-out RBI hits, 5 of them, which they usually do not come through in those types of situations. Yep. So they did the job. You got to put up runs when Skeens pitches because it gives you the best opportunity to win. And they did that here. So off to a hot start on Thursday.
Yeah, man, Skeens looked really good. It's so fun watching him. And we were sitting on the first base side when he picked off Ellie. It was a thing of beauty, man. He almost had it. He threw over twice. He almost had him the first time. And the second time he was nailed. So, you know, we have the treat as Pirates fans. I know we don't get a lot. We're not we don't get a lot of treats here, but we do have the treat of watching him pitch every 5 days, and I'm going to take advantage of that here. But let's move on to Friday. Friday, 6-5 win versus the Reds. They start off the series 2-0. Bailey Falter on the mound, not his best start. 5 innings, 6 hits, 5 earned runs, 2 walks, 4 Ks. Dennis Santana came in. He's been solid as of late. 2 innings pitched, 2 Ks. His ERA is now below 5. It's at 4.97. Chapman, 1 inning pitched, 1 hit, 1 walk, 3 Ks. And Bednar got his 23rd save. It was 1 inning, 1 hit, 1 K. Bart went 2-for-4 with an RBI. His average is still up around 280. What a season it's been for him. Definitely one of Ben's best moves since joining the Pirates. Rowdy collected 2 hits. He's around 250. And De La Cruz and O'Neill each doubled this game. They had 8 hits total, 3-for-11 with runners in scoring position, 5 left on base, 8 Ks. I mean, they were down 5-0 to start this game. Is that correct? I think it was 5-0.
Yeah.
And they just clawed back. You get in that bullpen. Who is Andrew? No, Andrew Abbott did not start. It was Buck Farmer who was, it was a bullpen game. And, the bullpen just ended, they ended up getting into it, and the rest was history, man. This Reds team really struggles in the pen. They're not very deep, especially as far back as the closer role, man. We'll talk about today's game. Alexis Diaz gave up a blew a save. But the Pirates' bats, 3 hits with runners in scoring position. Again, they limited the Ks this time, almost cut it in half, and got some big hits when it mattered. So, good way to start the series. I feel like the Pirates have manhandled the Reds. I don't know if I want to say manhandled, but they've definitely held their own against the Reds this year.
Going back to Bailey Falter real quick, I was surprised when I saw this because he's been generally good this year. I want to emphasize the importance of the adjustments that he's made in terms of becoming more athletic on the mound and getting a ton of extension with that fastball up in the zone. If you look at his Savant numbers, he's 98. He's in the 98th percentile in extension. We knew that, right? His fastball run value is in the 82nd percentile. He has a 7 fastball run value. Really, really good. Everything else is piss poor. It's all blue, like dark blue. It's really, really bad. So it just shows. I mean, the one little thing can lead to a ton of success, but not, like you said, not his best outing here.
Before we go on, I just want to say, just to touch on that, because you're talking about Bailey Falter, like, that's great. Like, they found something that he can use to his strength. As a starter, you'd like to have a little bit more in your repertoire to work with there. We've talked about this numerous times. I think you brought it up to me recently. Can he be a long man in the bullpen? Can he really ramp up that fastball in shorter stints and, you know, lean on what his strengths and do it in the bullpen? Because if his baseball savant page is showing fastball is like his carrying tool, how many times can you get through the order successfully as a starter? He's done remarkable this year. I mean, exceeded our expectations. We definitely didn't call for him not to make the roster, but as a starter, he's done a good job, but his future, he could have a future here on this team as a reliever. So something to think about.
I think that's even more relevant because you're going to have Bubba Chandler next year, potentially Braxton Ashcraft makes some noise, potentially Thomas Harrington makes some noise,
Mike Burrows,
Johan Oviedo is coming back.
Oh my God.
And you have Luis Ortiz, who has been pretty decent as a fifth guy in the rotation. Having a long man like Ortiz did earlier in the year is really, really important. So can Bailey Falter fit that role, or does he carve out another spot in the rotation? Who knows? But it's a good problem to have, right? And it's good to see that the Pirates can make some type of adjustments and develop guys even at the big league level to, you know, find success in different ways. Let's go to Saturday. I'll get by this real quick. It was a blowout, 10-2. Jake Woodford, guess what? Not that great. Through 3 1/3, 7 hits, 8 runs, 7 earned, 3 walks, 3 Ks. He's got an 8.01 ERA. I think we can put to bed the Jake Woodford is just unlucky takes. He was, don't get me wrong, but this is bound to happen at some point. Mentioned it earlier, Hunter Stratton was chasing a pass ball and ran into the limestone, ruptured patella tendon. He's done. Not good. It looked really bad. You hate to see it. Jalen Beeks, Ben Heller, Kyle Nicholas made an appearance. And then everybody's favorite relief pitcher, Rowdy Tellez. I heard Shaboozy playing in the background. And I'm like, the Pirates aren't hitting right now. They're playing his walkout music when he was pitching, and he was electric. Rowdy Tellez, one inning pitch, one hit, got through it, no runs. This was the Rowdy game. The only offense was Rowdy Tellez. He had a two-run moonshot into the Allegheny. Other than that, 0 for 3 runners in scoring position, 3 left on base, 6 Ks, 2 walks, 3 hits. Julian Aguilar on the other side, who we highlighted, only his second MLB start, 6 innings pitch, 3 hits, 2 earned, 2 walks, 4 Ks, gave up the home run. You had another Brian De La Cruz error in the outfield. Just one to forget about.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Definitely the Rowdy game, but not much happening there. Let's go into Sunday, today's game. We were there, 135 game. Luis Ortiz took the hill. He went 6 innings, 4 hits, no earned runs, 1 walk, 5 Ks. Great outing for Luis, man. His ERA is down to 3.36. Kyle Nicholas came in, only got 1 out, had 2 hits and 2 earned runs that Jalen Beeks surrendered when he came in to clean up for Nicholas. He didn't even get an out. 1 hit and 2 walks. And then Dennis Santana cleaned it up, 1 2/3, 2 Ks. And then Chapman earned a W, 1 inning, 2 Ks, 3.08 ERA on the year. His ERA has just continued to fall. The big moment was Grandal's walk-off in the ninth. It was really exciting. We stayed, and he hit a big walk-off home run to right center off of Alexis Diaz, his 7th on the year. He was 1 for 4 today with 2 RBIs. As I said earlier, he's been hot in this month. He's, I think, hitting like 279. And IKF had 3 hits today, 3 for 4 with a double. And Cruz was 2 for 4 with a stolen bases, 17th on the year. 10 hits total as a team today, 2 for 11 with runners in scoring position, 5 left on base, and only 2 strikeouts. That has to be a record low this year.
Yeah, that surprised me as well. I'll be honest, I wasn't very positive going into the ninth inning.
No,
that they were going to pull this off. It was all around sloppy. There was a couple errors made. I mean, obviously Nicholas didn't have his best outing. Beeks wasn't good.
Nicholas has thrown a lot this week too, though, by the way.
He has. And I'm not taking anything away from him. I still have a ton of faith in him. He's going to be a staple in the bullpen, hopefully for a long time as he continues to mature. Only negative out of this game, outside of what I've already stated, is Joey Bart getting hurt. Now, it happened early. Connor Joe came in and played pretty well today. He had a ground rule double, but hey, they took 3 of 4. Not bad.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like I said, we've had the Reds number this year, and you know, it's good to see. They're only a half game behind them in the standings. So need a big series against the Cubs here coming up.
Yep. All right, Scott, let's go to one of my favorite segments. Let's go see what's happening down on the farm. Why don't you get us started off with Indianapolis?
Yeah, let's do it. Indianapolis was in Columbus this weekend. I saw our friends at Bridge to Bucktober were there. Indianapolis is 59-63 on the year. They played the Clippers, which is a AAA affiliate to the Guardians. Henry Davis this week went 5 for 23, a double, 4 RBIs, and a stolen base. He's at 3.07 on the year. Nick York, man, 9 for 21, 1 run scored, 5 RBIs, 3 doubles, 3 walks, 4 Ks, 2 stolen bases. He's at 3.32. They've been playing in center field as of recently. He didn't play today, and Michael A. Taylor was just outright on waivers. So is there a Nick York coming to Pittsburgh? I don't know. We'll see, because we don't have the corresponding move for MAT yet. Billy Cook was 3 for 19 this week. Not his best week. 1 run scored, a double, 4 walks, stolen base. He's at 2.87 on the year. Tuesday, Jared Jones made what we think is his last start in AAA. 5 innings, 1 hit, no runs, 10 Ks. And then Wednesday, Mike Burrows went 4 innings, 5 hits, only gave up a run and 4 Ks. Thursday, Bubba Chandler went 5 innings, 5 hits, 3 earned runs, and 6 Ks. He's a 1.5 ERA in AAA since getting the call-up. Borucki and Holderman each had an earned run, and Modzinski gave up 3 earned runs in the 2/3 of an inning. So just some notes on some big league arms. Nicky G hit a solo shot, his 5th of the year in AAA. Peggy had 2 homers. He's got 11 this year. Friday, Thomas Harrington went 6 innings, 2 hits, 1 earned run, and 6 Ks. Nick York and Henry Davis each collected 2 hits and a double each. And then on Saturday, we got Swinski, who's had a rough go of it in AAA. He went 2-for-4 with a double and a home run, his 3rd on the year. He's batting 180. And then lastly today, Modzinski went 1 2/3. He gave up a hit and 2 Ks, and Brucky went 1 inning and had 3 Ks. So Indianapolis definitely been playing better ball down the stretch here. Their season's probably 2 weeks, got about 2 weeks left. So we'll definitely keep tracking Nick York and Billy Cook, as we know that Henry Davis was called up. But what's what happened in Altoona this weekend, Adam?
They were at the Richmond Flying Squirrels, the AA affiliate for the San Francisco Giants. Tuesday, Anthony Solometo took the mound, 4 1/3, 2 hits, 2 earned, 4 walks, 5 Ks. Sung Shae Chang hit his 11th, and Kirby Pichardo hit his 10th home run on the season. Friday, Dominic Piracci, 6 innings pitch, 4 hits, 1 earned, 2 walks, 4 Ks. Drake Fellows, 2 innings pitch, 1 hit, 1 K. Kirby Pichardo hit a solo home run for his 11th. And Sammy Siani went 3-for-4 with a double, 2 RBIs. His average is up to 259. And then Sunday, Solometo pitched again. 4 innings pitch, 5 hits, 2 earned, 1 walk, 2 Ks, and a home run. His ERA is at 6.17, which brings us to High A Greensboro.
We have Greensboro playing the Asheville Tourists, the single A affiliate of the Houston Astros. Tamar Johnson, we just learned of his call up to double A. 6-for-21 this week, 3 runs scored, a double, a home run, 5 stolen bases. He's got 20 on the year, by the way. Mitch Jeb went 8-for-23 with 4 runs scored, 3 RBIs, a double, and 4 stolen bases. Mitch Jeb probably has like 40 stolen bases. I swear he's got one every game. Tuesday, Derek Diamond went 6 innings, 1 hit, no run, 6 Ks. Then on Thursday, JP Massey, a name we haven't talked about as of late, 5 innings, 2 hits, 2 earned runs, 8 Ks, 5.05 ERA on the year. Friday, big game for Carlson Reed. He's been stellar since getting called up to Greensboro. 6 innings, 1 hit, no earned runs, 1 walk, 10 Ks. He's got a 0.48 ERA in Greensboro. Alessandro Urcolani came in relief, threw 3 innings, no hits, and 6 Ks. Tamar went 2-for-4 with a double and a home run, his 13th on the year, and had an RBI and a stolen base. On Saturday, Lonnie White, Hudson Head, and Sean Ross all homered. This team has a lot of homers. Lonnie White has 14, Hudson Head has 13, and Sean Ross has 21. And then Sunday, Derek Diamond went 3 innings, 1 hit, 1 earned run, 5 Ks, while Omar Alfonso hit his 2nd home run since getting called up to Greensboro, and Tamar stole his 20th bag. Which brings us to Bradenton.
Yeah, let's close it out in Bradenton at Lakeland Flying Tigers, the low A affiliate for the Tigers. Johnny Severino, not a great week. 1-for-17, 2 runs with a double, 7 strikeouts. Xander Muth, 3 innings pitch, 1 hit, 3 earned, 4 walks, 6 Ks. And then Michael Kennedy, who just got promoted to High A Greensboro, 1 1/3, 3 hits, 3 earned, 1 walk, 1 K. Wednesday, our guy Christian Curtis, 3 1/3, 3 hits, 2 earned, 3 walks, 3 Ks. Thursday, newly drafted Will Taylor and Axial Applause each doubled. Saturday, game one, they had a doubleheader. Rivas went 2-for-3, a double and a home run for his 12th on the year. And then game two, Gorson goes 3-for-3 with a double and 2 RBIs. And Sunday will be Michael Kennedy's last outing. 5 innings pitched, 2 hits, no earned, 2 walks, and 5 Ks. A nice way to go out. Scott, let's go to our minor league player of the week. Why don't you get that kicked off?
Yeah, this week had some names to decide between, but we're going with Carlson Reed. I think this might be his 2nd minor league player of the week. He went 6 innings pitched, 1 hit, no earned runs, 1 walk, 10 Ks. Big week for him, 0.48 ERA in Greensboro. He gave up his 1st earned run in his last start. He's been stellar. I think he's got 4 or 5 starts up there. Carlson Reed, man. He's a name that we don't talk about enough. It just shows how deep this system is with arms. But yeah, congrats to Carlson.
Really good. Really good stuff. I'm excited what I've seen from him this year. Scott, let's get into the Cubs.
Yeah.
Got the Cubs coming to town. They've played them in Chicago this year already. You're going to see some of the same faces coming to town. This has become one of my favorite segments because I like diving deep into who the Pirates are going to face and trying to see what the matchups are going to be like. The Cubs have been having a pretty decent August. They haven't completely sunk. I know they haven't been great this year, but
they were in last for a while.
They're third in the Central now. They're 65-66. They're 11 games back in the Central, only 5.5 out of the wild card, 13-8 in August. Monday, Keller versus Jameson Taillon, former Bucco. Taillon, in 22 games this year, he's 8-8 with a 3.77 ERA and 126 2/3 innings pitched. He's got 101 Ks. His last outing versus the Pirates, 4 2/3, 6 hits, 3 earned, 1 home run, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts on 92 pitches. Here's what you're going to see from Jameson. A healthy mix of pitches here. Four-seam, cutter, sweeper, curveball, sinker, change. Grant, he only throws a changeup 4% of the time, and the expected batting average on it is .333. But you're going to see heavy usage of the four-seam, cutter, sweeper, and curveball. He's going to sit around 92. His fastball run value is very high, 87th percentile. He's not going to walk a lot of guys. The expected batting average overall on him this year is .253. So, you know, not great, but also not significant. In terms of splits, he's given up 20 walks to lefties this year in comparison to 6 to righties. So I would expect to see a little bit more. I mean, obviously, if we're facing a right-handed batter, Shelton's going to play the splits, but I'd expect to see a very heavy lefty lineup. Versus lefties, 11 home runs, 20 walks, .270 average, .324 on base, .452 slugging. Versus righties, .241, .257, .369. He's going to throw strikes, man. He's going to throw a lot of strikes. He's going to miss middle with the four seam. He likes to start with the cutter a lot. Listen, the only ball he doesn't consistently throw for a strike is the curveball. He likes to spike that a lot. And I think you saw that a lot in the first outing that he had with the Pirates. He could spin it. Jameson's always been able to spin it, and he's going to bounce that off the plate. He's going to fool you. But here's what really stood out to me. Off the four seam, the batting average, not expecting batting average, anything like that. The batting average off the four seam fastball is .291 with an expected batting average of .295. So he's going to try and get a lot of ground balls, but if you could, you know, get a launch angle here and make contact, it's likely things go your way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we know Jameson, right? Second overall pick by the Pirates in what, like 2012 or something like that. He's going to throw the kitchen sink at you. He has like 6 different pitches, 3 different iterations of the fastball. He throws a four seam, a sinker, and a cutter, as you mentioned. He's not going to overpower you. He's not going to generate a ton of whiffs or chase. Maybe with this team, he will. I don't know. We know how the Pirates are. But he's going to fill up the zone and avoid walks. And we just got to, you know, we got to take what he gives us. I could see him fooling some of our guys with that spike curveball. But don't let him overpower us. You gotta have some good ABs against him. I feel like maybe stretch him out, make him throw a lot of pitches. But yeah, we faced him already this year, and we'll face him again tomorrow. Taillon versus Keller is kind of a fun matchup too. You know, he was a Bucco, and I'm sure he was here while Mitch Keller was coming up through the system. So it'll be a fun matchup, and this will be a good series because we're only 2.5 behind the Cubs in the Central, and they're in, what, second or third, you said? Third. So, yeah. Let's move on to Tuesday. We got Justin Steele. The Pirates starter is TBD, but we think it's going to be Jared Jones, so we'll go with that. Justin Steele is – last year was one of the best – pitchers in the National League, one of the best left-handed pitchers in the league. This year he's 4-5 with 3.07 ERA in 21 games, 125 Ks and a 107 WHIP. In his last 7 games, he's been really good in August, but his last 7 games, he's 2-2 with a 3.93 ERA. And he has a 166 ERA in August with in 21 2/3 innings, 0.88 WHIP, 31.8 K percentage. So he's been better and better as the year's gone on. He had some injuries at the beginning of the season. I feel like we had his number. We faced him twice in 1 week in May, and the first time was in Skeen's debut at PNC. And we roughed him up a little bit. Four innings pitched, six hits, six earned runs, three Ks, three homers. Connor Joe, O'Neill, and Michael A. Taylor. I think it was Michael A. Taylor's first home run as a Pirate.
Yeah, opposite field, I think.
Yep. And then we faced him the next week at Wrigley. He went 5 2/3, six innings, four earned runs, seven Ks, and gave up two homers to Ollie and Nicky G. So we've five homers off of him this year already. You know, he's a guy that's not going to overpower you with the fastball either. He's gonna sit probably like 92, same as Taillon, and he's gonna throw a slider too that sits around 83. His fastball he throws 60% of the time. His slider 29% of his time. That's 90% of his pitches.
Yeah, he's a two pitch guy.
He's a two pitch guy. He has a sinker, curve, and change, but he throws those 5% or less of the time. So. Fastball slider guy, he's not going to overpower you. He limits barrels and hard hits, but we've had his number this year, and I don't really know why. It'll be interesting to see how, you know, it'll be a good matchup, him versus Jared Jones.
The reason Justin Steele is successful is because he can tunnel very well with those two pitches. It pretty much looks like it's going to be the same thing coming out of his hand. But yeah. 14, 60%, like you said, slider 29%. He's going to sit at 92, average 83 on the slider. The splits are pretty much terrible for both righties and lefties. I'd expect a righty-heavy lineup, but righties are slashing 279, 363 with a 23.3% K rate. And then lefties 151, 237, 186 with a 30.9 K rate. So for the most part, outside of the Pirates, he has been pretty good, right? You got to stay ahead in counts. Here, you got to jump on him. But let's go on to Wednesday, Scott. This is a matchup I really like. And the numbers, I mean, people clown on Kyle Hendricks all the time, and I think the numbers justify that just a little bit when you do a little bit of a deep dive into it. Hendricks on the year is 3-10. With a 6.33 ERA in 23 games. He has 67 strikeouts. His expected ERA is not better, much better than the ERA he's got going now at 4.97. Expected batting average, 2.87. He's reliant on Chase. He's not going to blow anything by you. We're not getting overpowered by any means this series. You're not having a guy that throws over 93 miles per hour the entire series.
Yeah.
You're seeing very similar styles of pitching here. The arsenal for Hendricks is a sinker, change, curveball, and a four-seam, which is his least thrown pitch at 12%. He's going to rely heavily on the sinker and the changeup. He's going to try and use a combo at, you know, to keep you off balance. Tries to stay down in the zone for the most part. Again, there's not great extension there. There's not a fastball that he's going to blow by you at the top of the zone. So he's got to work around that. Here's the batting averages on all of the pitches. On his four-seam fastball, hitters are batting 333.
Oh.
On his changeup, they're hitting 272. On his sinker, they are hitting 329. And on his curveball, they are hitting 246. He only throws the curveball 13% of the time. Here are the splits versus lefties. They are slashing 305, 362, 520 versus righties, 279, 320, 418. It's something that I really am looking forward to, but I know the Pirates are probably going to let me down. Even more so, when he is with runners in scoring position, hitters are hitting 351, 379, 506. With runners just on base, 374, 406, 639. Got to get runners on base. Pirates struggle with runners in scoring position, guys left on base. This is the bread and butter here. This is where Kyle Hendricks struggles. If you're able to get guys on, chances are you're going to be able to move them in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It reminds me of the time that we went around asking how many hits would you get if you, you know, got so many ABs in the major leagues, and everyone's like, "Am I facing Kyle Hendricks or not?" And I was
got
like,
that twice. That's
brutal. Like, more than once for sure. But no, this is an Ivy League guy. He's a Dartmouth guy. And what made him so successful early on in his career is just being smart, being a smart pitcher. He's never he averages 88 on the fastball, but he's going to hit his spots and just carve you up. He's lost his juice. I will say this. He has only 18 games started out of the 23 appearances this year. They did move him to the pen in like a long man role this year. Since rejoining the rotation at the beginning of August, I think he's had better results. But yeah, man, he's faced the Pirates twice this year. At PNC, he had a better outing. That was the day after the Skeens debut. He went 5 innings, 2 hits, and 5 Ks, only 1 earned run, which was a cruise home run. And then they faced him next week at Wrigley, and he went 4 2/3, gave up 11 hits and 7 earned runs. So, yeah, this is a game that I look at on the calendar, and I'm like, this should be an automatic W. It's Paul Skeens versus Kyle Hendricks. But it's the Pirates, man. We got to be careful.
Here's another stat. When he is behind in the count, okay, so when he is 2-1, 3-1, 3-0, 1-0, hitters are hitting 280+. Those numbers increase. They gradually go. It went all the way up to like 350. So be smart up there, guys.
Yeah.
Let's not blow this one.
Let's not strike out more than a couple times against him, if at all.
Yeah.
And let's just make some hard contact, because he definitely gives that up. And don't get too cute up there.
No, never want to get too cute. But looking forward to that. I will be gone this week. I will be going out of the country. Scott will be taking over. We'll have a new co-host on Wednesday, or when the episode comes out, on Thursday. And then friend of the show, who has probably the most appearances in Bucko Banner history, Noah Hiles, will be taking over at the week's end to recap the weekend series. Scott, you got it. You can take it from here. Let's get out of here. But before we do, let's give our players of the week for hitter of the week. I think this was pretty clear cut. He has been killing it in August off of lefties, off of righties. But O'Neill Cruz is the hitter of the week. He's got a 333 average this week, 8 hits, 2 RBIs, 4 walks, 4 stolen bases. It's noticeable.
Yeah.
The approach is much different. The 4 walks really stands out to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we talked about it before, it's not hopeless against lefties. You can actually slot him into the lineup confidently right now. So you like to see that as the season goes on and as we come to an end here, the adjustments that he's made. He's young. This is his first full season in the big leagues. So it's nice to see that he can recognize something that's going on and make that adjustment and find success doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. O'Neill's been a pleasant surprise here in the second half. Definitely has made adjustments. So it's a positive for the Pirates, man, going into next year. Let's go to pitcher of the week, Mitch Keller. Mitch Keller had a big week. Pitched Tuesday against the Rangers in Texas. 7 innings pitched, 3 hits, no earned runs, no walks, and 9 Ks. Generated 13 whiffs. We talked about it on the previous episode in the middle of the week. One of his most dominant starts that we've seen at the big league level against the defending World Series champions. So we got O'Neill Cruz and Mitch Keller as our players of the week.
Well deserved. Mitch was an absolute robot. Yep. On Tuesday, it was maybe the most dominant I've seen him this year. And he's had a lot of good outings this year, but I keep thinking about it, man. Mitch Keller is going to be a like mid rotation guy, probably.
Yeah. With all the arms we have coming up next year.
Yeah. It's really, really, really bright. The future for the Pirates potentially could be very good, at least with the arms. We appreciate you as always for following. If you don't already, subscribe on YouTube, like the video, leave a comment. That's the best way you could support the podcast. If you're just listening with audio, download the episode, give us a 5-star review. It means a ton. While you're at it, go to buckobanner.com, get some merch. We wore it out at the ballpark this week. I had my Jared Jones, Natasha Bedingfield shirt. I had my Livy Dunn's boyfriend shirt going on. It's awesome. Hey, and we could say it now, we delivered 3 shirts to Jared Jones.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Jared Jones ordered three of his shirts. So potentially maybe he'll be wearing it. If it's good enough for him, it's good enough for you.
Trust me, you want to get these shirts while they're out there. And then the Nikki G shirts, the Rowdy shirts, even the Livy Dunn's boyfriend shirts. Or the Bucko Banner merch. Just go get your merch.
Absolutely. Go support us. We appreciate it a ton. Go follow us on Instagram, Twitter. Shoot us any questions. Retweet us or repost us, whatever you want to call it on X. But until then, we will see you next episode. Let's raise it.
Raise it.
Rocking 101, she compliment my taste. Whiskey and my lemonade, cause I like the way it tastes. Best seats at the Pirates game, they let me run the base. Yeah, my time is like my money, cause I can't afford to waste. Wifey is a lawyer, take my date to my dates. Order steak by the plates, and then case after case. Run my race at my pace, clear the grass of the snake.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Assistant customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.